So guys.
Yeah.
What's up?
Dalton sent me a meme and it was just hilarious. This dude pulls up a picture of D&D Beyond in his computer under Ranger, right? And then he's like, oh, what the heck? So he wipes his screen and then Druid is just there. He's like, oh, good. I thought there was trash on my screen. So anyways, this is Traveler's Tips and Tales. I'm Mike.
I'm Ben.
And I'm Jake.
And today we're going to continue talking to you guys about the new subclasses that was released in Tosh's Cauldron of Everything, because we are running out of content.
Yikes.
We're not, all right. But all right.
I'm sorry. Really, I like to make jokes. I like to make jokes.
Your jokes are going to get us into some deep shit one day, Mike.
Liz.
They're going to be like, they're running out of content. We better jump ship now.
If you guys hear that we're running out of content and you decide you want to jump ship now, then you are not cool, all right?
Yeah, well, also
You guys are lame.
But in all reality, we are never running out of content because there's always new content being released, which means we have content for years.
And we'll just make our own content.
Yeah, true. If somehow Wizards of the Coast stops producing content for us to review, then we'll just produce our own.
More and more one-shots.
It'll be less one-shots. It'll be more campaigns.
No, it's okay. I'm actually writing a book, so that's cool. We'll talk about that.
I mean, let's be honest. We just start reviewing Homebrew and being like, this is stupid, broken, and this is why. And then we'd also be like, this is stupid, and this is why.
We'll just start pulling things off of D&D Wiki.
Yep.
There's already people doing that, and I can't stand those videos because I'm like, this isn't even a thing like that you had to review. You went and found this. Some guy made this for fun, and you're just tearing him a new one for no reason at all.
And one day that might be us.
I'll just pull things that people make and post on the Facebook pages that I monitor. I'll just be like, guys, this dude on Facebook posted his own homebrew subclass. Let's take a whole thing apart and just dissect it for what it is.
I can't wait for people to do that to our stuff.
I hope they do.
They're like, this is dumb.
Because here's the thing, right? If they decide to do that to our content, then that just means that they cared enough about our content to take the time to dissect it. And either way, whether they're shining it in a good light or a bad light, we're still getting publicity.
They're like, these traveler stat blocks are just garbage. And we're like, yeah, they are.
Just like us.
Anyways. Let's get into the episode. Today we're covering the subclasses for Druid, Fighter, and Monk. And we're going to go ahead and start off with Druid today. The first one that Druid has in Tosh's is Circle of Spores. Yeah, that's a reprint. That's from Ravnica. True. So we're going to skip that one. And we're going to go to Circle of Stars.
Bye, Spores. See you next time.
So at second level, when you get this subclass, because that's how druids are, you get two things. The first thing you get is called Star Map. You've created a star chart as part of your heavenly studies. It is a tiny object and can serve as a spellcasting focus for your druid spells. You determine its form by rolling on the star map table or by choosing one. While holding this map, you have these benefits. One, you know the guidance cantrip. Two, you have the Guiding Bolt spell prepared. It does count as a druid spell for you, and it does not count against the number of spells you have prepared. And three, you can cast Guiding Bolt without expending a spell slot. You can do so a number of times equal to your proficiency bonus, and you regain all expended uses when you finish a long rest.
What?
They gave Druid the ultimate cleric spell.
Dude,
there's what? No point to play cleric anymore.
At and 20th the ultimate level, cleric, you just get 6 free Guiding Bolts.
And the ultimate cleric cantrip.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. You just get free guiding bolts too. Literally free. Costs nothing.
Yeah, you start off with your normal amount of spell slots, right? But then you just start off with two free first level slots that are dedicated to guiding bolt.
Yo, first two rounds of combat, I don't care what's going on. I'm guiding bolting for some homies for free.
Yeah.
Literally free of charge.
We should really point this out to Bailey.
Yeah.
Or, hear me out, we shouldn't. If we want a druid that'll actually do druid things.
And here's the thing, right? So, like, you might be thinking, well, you know, it's a tiny object. That's easy to lose, right? Yeah, but if you lose it, you can perform a one-hour ceremony to magically create a replacement. And the ceremony can be performed during a short or long rest, and it destroys the previous map, so if someone else has it, it's just gone.
Can't swipe it from you.
Yeah. I really like nice. That already. Yeah. That's the first thing you get.
Mm-hmm.
You also get, at second level, Starry Form. As a bonus action, you can expend a use of your wild shape feature to take on a starry form rather than transforming into a beast. While in your starry form, you retain your game statistics, but your body becomes luminous. Your joints glimmer like stars, and glowing lines connect them as a star chart. This form sheds bright light in a 10-foot radius and dim light for an additional 10 feet. Form lasts for 10 minutes. It ends early if you dismiss it, no action required, are incapacitated, die, or use this feature again. Whenever you assume this starry form, choose which of the following constellations glimmers on your body. Your choice gives you certain benefits while in the form. The first one is Archer. A constellation of an archer appears on you when you activate this form, and as a bonus action on your subsequent turns while it lasts, you can make a ranged spell attack, hurling a luminous arrow that targets one creature within 60 feet of you. On a hit, the attack deals radiant damage equal to 1d8 plus your wisdom modifier. That's pretty sick. Hello, Sun Soul Monk.
Hi. You're talking to me, right? That is me, right? Yeah.
Yes.
I'm the Sun Soul Monk.
Yeah.
Hi.
Hi. How you doing? How do you like that?
It's pretty neat.
You can also choose Chalice. A constellation of a life-giving goblet appears on you. When you cast a spell using a spell slot that restores hit points to a creature, you or another creature within 30 feet of you can regain hit points equal to 1d8 plus your wisdom modifier. So you basically can just get extra cure wounds.
Mm-hmm.
Which is pretty fantastic.
Yeah.
And then the last constellation that you can choose while in your story form is Dragon. A constellation of a wise dragon appears on you. When you make an intelligence or a wisdom check or a con saving throw to maintain concentration on a spell, you can treat a roll of 9 or lower on the d20 as a 10. This is at second level, guys.
Yeah, you wanted to know what I thought about Archer? What I think about Archer is that I'll probably take Dragon.
Yeah, that... this is level 2, and you can do this. This is incredible.
Yeah.
I
feel like incredible might be a little strong of a word there, but alright.
I mean, that is a very, very good ability, especially at level 2. I think that would be a good ability even at level 6.
Mm. But instead...
Yeah, instead at level 6, you get Cosmic Omen. Whenever you finish a long rest, you can consult your star map for omens. When you do so, roll a die. Until you finish your next long rest, you gain access to a special reaction based on whether you rolled an even or an odd number on the die. On even numbers, you get Wheel, spelled W-E-A-L, not W-H-E-E-L.
I don't know.
Whenever a creature you can see within 30 feet of you is about to make an attack roll, saving throw, or an ability check, you can use your reaction to roll a d6 and add the number rolled to the total.
I see.
That's pretty neat. Pretty neat. Or
You know why you add the d6?
Huh.
It's because they get ran over by a wheel.
Shut up. Okay. If you rolled an odd number, though, you get Woe. Spelled W-O-E, not W-H-O-A. Whenever a creature you can see within 30 feet of you is about to make an attack roll, saving throw, and ability check, you can use your reaction to roll a d6 and subtract the number rolled from the total. You can use this reaction a number of times equal to your proficiency bonus, and you regain all expended uses when you finish a long rest.
Now, you know why you get to subtract that D6?
Because they were hit by a wheel.
No, because they saw someone else get hit by a wheel, and they went, whoa.
So at 10th level, you get twinkling constellations. The constellations of your starry form improve. The 1d8 of the archer in the chalice becomes 2d8, and while the dragon is active, you have a flying speed of 20 feet and can hover. Moreover, at the start of each of your turns while in your starry form, you can change which constellation glimmers on your body.
Hello, dragon. I'm more likely to pick you now.
I have a sudden urge to multiclass.
And play another druid.
Into druid.
Well, I want to play this druid, a divination wizard, and a rune child sorcerer all together.
Oh boy. That's a lot of multiclass there.
I activate my magic, my entire body lights up like a disco ball, and I can see 3 years into the future.
See, here's the thing. You're playing a druid, which is wisdom, a divination wizard, which is intelligence, and a sorcerer, which is charisma.
You have to max out all of your mental stats.
Your physical stats are going to be a dumpster fire.
Well, here's the thing. I'll just, like I said, I activate my magic. My body lights up like a Christmas tree. Okay. I can see so far into the future. I can see, like, my kids' mistakes but they haven't even made yet in life. And then some guy walks up and it's just like, bam, and then I'm out. That's it.
So at 14th level, you get full of stars. While in your starry form, you become partially incorporeal, giving you resistance to bludgeoning, piercing, and slashing damage.
And now you are also slightly tanky.
Thank God.
Congrats.
So how many levels of each subclass you've taken, Ben?
That's a good question.
Because if I were you, I'd consider taking 14 of this one.
But you're not me.
That's true. That is true. Michael is not Ben.
And if I'm not you, I still suggest taking 14 levels of this one.
But that doesn't leave me with too many other levels to spend on my other ones, you know.
Mm-hmm. True.
He does 14 in this one. He can only get up to 3 in the others.
If he wants to split them evenly.
Yeah.
Which I'm assuming he does.
We'll see.
But yeah, that is the Circle of Stars. I really like this subclass. This is probably going to be whenever I next decide to play a druid, which will probably be a hot minute. I might be playing this one.
Yeah.
Next is the Circle of Wildfire.
Ah, like the one Kevin played in that one shot.
Yeah. That famous one shot with Gunk.
Yes. Gunk. So you guys got to see kind of how it plays, but you don't necessarily know the wording of all of the abilities, or maybe there were some abilities that Kevin didn't showcase.
I'm not gonna lie, I half paid attention to what he was talking about. I was just like, that's a lot of fire.
Yeah.
I'm pretty convinced that in that 3-part one shot, or what we like to call a 3-shot, I had a different voice for Gunk each and every time. And 2 of them were recorded back to back.
So here's the thing. That series is so mind-boggling to me because it's technically a one shot. We refer to it as a 3-shot. We recorded it on 2 different days.
2 different days. So, yeah. And those 2 days were like a week apart.
The numbers are all scattered. But you know what? So is the one shot, so. Circle of Wildfire. 2nd level, you get Circle Spells. You have formed a bond with a wildfire spirit, a primal being of creation and destruction. Your link with the spirit grants you access to some spells when you reach certain levels in this class, as shown on the Circle of Wildfire Spells table. Once you gain access to one of these spells, you always have it prepared and it does not count against the number of spells you can prepare each day. If you gain access to a spell that does not appear on the druid spell list, the spell is nonetheless a druid spell for you. And then these spells are at second level, Burning Hands and Cure Wounds. Third level, Flaming Sphere and Scorching Ray. Fifth level, Plant Growth and Revivify. Seventh level, Aura of Life and Fire Shield. And ninth level, Flame Strike and Mass Cure Wounds.
Mass Cure Wounds.
Pretty good spells in there. Pretty good spells. You're starting to get into some cleric territory again.
Woo!
Also at second level, you get Summon Wildfire Spirit. You can summon the primal spirit bound to your soul. As an action, you can expend one use of your wild shape feature to summon your wildfire spirit, rather than assuming a beast form. The spirit appears in an unoccupied space of your choice that you can see within 30 feet of you. Each creature within 10 feet of the spirit, other than you when it appears, must succeed on a dexterity saving throw against your spell save DC, or take 2d6 fire damage. The spirit is friendly to you and your companions and obeys your commands. See this creature's game statistics in the Wildfire Spirit stat block, which uses your proficiency bonus in several places. You determine the spirit's appearance. Some spirits take the form of a humanoid figure made of gnarled branches covered in flame, while others look like beasts wreathed in fire. I'm looking at the stat block here. It's pretty spicy. But I'll leave that to you guys to look up. In combat, the spirit shares your initiative count, but it takes its turn immediately after yours. The only action it takes on its turn is the dodge action, unless you take a bonus action on your turn to command it to take some other action. That action can be one in its stat block or any other action. If you are incapacitated, the spirit can take any of its actions of its choice, not just dodge. The spirit manifests for 1 hour until it is reduced to 0 hit points, or until you use this feature to summon the spirit again or die.
Burb.
Yeah.
It's Burb.
Yeah, it's Burb.
Burb.
It is Kevin's Burb.
Yes, Burb.
At sixth level, you get Enhanced Bond. The bond with your Wildfire Spirit enhances your destructive and restorative spells. Whenever you cast a spell that deals fire damage or restores hit points while your Wildfire Spirit is summoned, roll a d8 and you gain a bonus equal to the number rolled to one damage or healing roll of the spell. In addition, when you cast a spell with a range other than self, the spell can originate from you or your Wildfire Spirit.
That all sounds familiar to Burb.
Yeah.
I feel like I remember these things.
Yeah.
Happening with Burb.
Yeah, it's pretty solid.
Mm-hmm.
10th level, you get Cauterizing Flames. You gain the ability to turn death into magical flames that can heal or incinerate. When a small or larger creature dies within 30 feet of you or your Wildfire Spirit, a harmless spectral flame springs forth in the dead creature's space and flickers there for 1 minute. When a creature you can see enters that space, you can use your reaction to extinguish the spectral flame there and either heal the creature or deal fire damage to it. The healing or damage equals 2d10 plus your wisdom modifier. You can use this reaction a number of times equal to your proficiency bonus, and you regain all expended uses when you finish a long rest. This also happened in the one shot.
It did, huh?
Yeah. Used it to, I forget who he used it to heal, actually.
I don't remember.
But he did use it to heal somebody, I remember that. At 14th level, you get your final ability from the subclass called Blazing Revival. The bond with your Wildfire Spirit can save you from death. If the spirit is within 120 feet of you when you are reduced to 0 hit points and thereby fall unconscious, you can cause the spirit to drop to 0 hit points. You then regain half your hit points and immediately rise to your feet. Once you use this feature, you cannot use it again until you finish a long rest.
That's pretty useful.
Yeah, so you basically
last time
just
I checked,
get half your max hit points in temporary hit points, essentially. As
last
long
time
as your
I checked,
beast is still up.
Yeah, last time I checked, the Burb is pretty useful, but not that useful. So, like, in the case of it's you or the Burb, probably pick yourself, right?
I mean,
considering
I would hope
how
so.
You control the Burb.
Yeah.
On the bright side, though, I mean, if you go down, your Burb can do whatever it wants instead of just the dodge action. So you know, devil's advocate here.
The only problem is you are no longer casting spells through it.
You know.
So whatever. It has to just take its own measly actions.
But it actions nonetheless, my dear friend. Actions true. Nonetheless.
True.
Yep.
Yeah, that is the new stuff for Druid.
Yes. And next up is Fighter. The most basic of classes. But we're here to make it less basic, because that's exactly what the Fighter subclasses do. So, we're going to start right off with the Psi Warrior subclass. Starting at third level, you get psionic power. You harbor a wellspring of psionic energy within yourself. This energy is represented by your psionic energy dice, which are each d6. You have a number of these dice equal to twice your proficiency bonus, and they fuel various psionic powers you have, which are detailed below. Some of your powers extend the psionic energy die they use as they expend the psionic energy dice they use as specified in the power's description, and you can't use a power if it requires you to use a die when your die are all expended. You regain all your expended psionic energy dice when you finish a long rest. In addition, as a bonus action, you can regain one expended psionic dice energy die, but you can't do so again until you finish a short or long rest. When you reach certain levels in this class, the size of your psionic dice energies increases. At 5th level, they become d8s. At 11th level, they're d10s. And at 17th level, they're d12s. The powers below use your psionic energy dice. There's only 3 of them, so it's not too bad.
Nice.
Yes. But, yeah. So, the first 3 are, when you, this is protective field. When you or another creature you can see within 30 feet of you takes damage, you can use a reaction to expend 1 psionic energy die, roll the die, and reduce the damage taken by the number rolled plus your intelligence modifier, minimum reduction of 1, as you create a momentary shield of telekinetic force. The second one is Psionic Strike. You can propel your weapons with psionic force once on each of your turns immediately after you hit a target within 30 feet of you with an attack and deal damage to it with a weapon. You can expend 1 psionic energy dice, rolling it and dealing force damage to that target equal to the number rolled plus your intelligence modifier. And the last one is Telekinetic Movement. You can move an object or a creature with your mind. As an action, you target 1 loose object that is large or smaller, or 1 willing creature other than yourself. If you can see the target and it is within 30 feet of you, you can move it up to 30 feet to an unoccupied space you can see. Alternatively, if it is a tiny object, you can move it to or from your hand. Either way, you can move the target horizontally, vertically, or both. Once you take this action, you can't do so again until you finish a short or long rest, unless you expend a psionic energy dice to take it again.
You know what this subclass sounds perfect for? Playing a Gith Yankee.
Yeah.
It sounds like it fits like a glove. Almost like they were intending it to be used that way.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe.
I like the idea of it for Gith Zerai.
So it has both, though. Like, it has the offensive and defensive abilities that you could get from their racial abilities.
Yeah.
Which I find interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So you could just give them a quarterstaff and they're a Gith Yankee, or a Gith Zerai now.
Mm-hmm.
Or give them a sword and they're a Gith Yankee.
This is true. At 7th level, you get Telekinetic Adept. You have mastered new ways to use telekinetic abilities. Detail below. You get 2 more! Surprise! you get Psi-Powered Leap, which is, as a bonus action, you can propel your body with your mind. You gain a flying speed equal to twice your walking speed until the end of your current turn. Once you take this bonus action, you can't do so again until you finish a short or long rest, unless you expend a psionic energy dice to take it again. And the second one that you could choose, that is, you know, in your, like, pool of options to use your psionic energy dice for, is Telekinetic Thrust. You can deal damage to a target with your psionic strike. When you deal damage to a target with your psionic strike, you can force that target to make a strength saving throw against a DC equal to 8 plus your proficiency bonus plus your intelligence modifier. If the save fails, you knock the target prone or move it up to 10 feet in any direction horizontally. Which is kind of interesting because you could hypothetically hit them with whatever and then they take the force damage and then they get pushed 10 feet towards you. But whatever.
Dude, they're Jedi. Oh my god.
They force jumps and force pushing and pulling and whatnot. Yep. But it's really like nerfed.
It's like fledglings.
Not... Yeah. I mean, the jump part, totally accurate. I mean, you just get a jump or like your flying speed, which you could, you know, make it into like looking like a jump. And yeah, it's just like your walking speed equal to twice your walking speed, which is like crazy. But yeah. Anyways, at 10th level, you get Guarded Mind. The psionic energy flowing through you has bolstered your mind. You have resistance to psychic damage. Moreover, if you start your turn charmed or frightened, you can expend a psionic energy dice and end every effect on yourself, subjecting you to those conditions. So if they just like stack up on you, you could just get rid of all of them at once. There just so happens to be like 12 dragons that are all doing their frightening presence on you.
Uh-huh.
Or just like a number of like dragons and succubus that are all like charming and making you frightened. And you're just like, all of you get out of my head. I am. My mind is at peace.
Yeah, I may or may not have a character who's going to be dipping into this at some point.
Anyways, at 15th level, you get Bulwark of Force. You can shield yourself and others with telekinetic force. As a bonus action, you can choose creatures. You can choose creatures, which can include you, that you can see within 30 feet of you, up to a number of creatures equal to your intelligence modifier, minimum of one creature. Each of the chosen creatures is protected by half cover for 1 minute or until you're incapacitated. Once you take this bonus action, you can't do so again until you finish a long rest, unless you expend psionic energy dice to take it again. That's pretty neat. I can't remember off the top of my head what half cover is.
It's when half your body is covered to get a plus two bonus.
I know that, but yeah, the number is what I meant. Yeah,
plus two.
Plus two. So yeah, that's a natural plus two to, I mean, up to five people. If you're super smart, you know.
Yeah.
Depending on how good your brain waves are. Anyways, at level 18, you get Telekinetic Master. Your ability to move creatures and objects with your mind is matched by few. You can cast the telekinesis spell, requiring no components, and your spellcasting ability for the spell is intelligence. On each of your turns, when you concentrate on the spell, including the turn when you cast it, you can make one attack with a weapon as a bonus action. Once you cast the spell with this feature, you can't do so again until you finish a long rest, unless you expend a psionic energy die to cast it again. This is all as a fighter. Like, you're still have four attacks and whatnot.
Like, yeah.
And all these action surges and et cetera, et cetera.
You're just a but Jedi, yeah, bro.
You're just a Jedi. Give this man a lightsaber.
But sword, yeah, of sunlight.
That's Psy Warrior. Yeah. It's pretty neat. My favorite one may or may not be the Psy-powered leap.
You mean force jump?
Yeah. But anyways,
it is pretty good.
I heard you guys liked runes. I heard you talk about runes earlier, Ben, right? Yeah.
I did. You know there's an NPC in the world named Rune that you guys royally murdered back in the day?
Yeah, good times.
You know, we don't talk about that.
I think we should. I mean,
we could.
He had a CR30 stat block, and you guys killed him at like level 16 or something like that. Something absurd.
Whatever.
You guys really just ganked him. Like,
nah. What do you expect us to do? Man had a lot of hit points. Okay.
Yeah, well, you know, sometimes that's what you gotta do.
Anyways, This one's going to be a little chonky. There's a lot to talk about Root Knights here, okay? So, starting out at third level, you get a feature called bonus proficiencies. You gain proficiency with Smith's tools, and you learn to speak, read, and write giant. Cool. Doesn't really matter that much. I like it, but whatever. Actually important stuff here. Rune Carver. You can use magical runes to enhance your gear. You learn two runes of your choice from among these runes described in a second here. And each time you gain a level in this class, you can replace one rune you know with a different one of this feature. When you reach certain levels of this class, you learn additional runes, which is at third level, you know two, obviously. At seventh level, you know three. At tenth level, you know four. And at 15th level, you get five total. So you just get plus one each time you hit third, seventh, tenth, and 15th. Starting at 2 at 3rd. But anyways. Whenever you finish a long rest, you can touch a number of objects equal to the number of runes you know, and you inscribe a different rune onto each of the objects. To be eligible, an object must be a weapon, a suit of armor, a shield, a piece of jewelry, or something else you can wear or hold in a hand. Your rune remains on an object until you finish a long rest, and an object can bear only one of your runes. So, you guys want to get into the runes? They are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of them.
Give me the runes, man. I need the runes.
Give me the runes. I need the runes, man.
I would like to point something out before we start. The new Warlock thing, Pact of Talisman, you could totally use that for this. Or you could inscribe a rune onto the amulet that you wear that is actually your ally's. That way he can teleport to you at any point. And you get a cool magic thing out of it.
A cool magic thing like a cloud rune, maybe. This rune emulates a deceptive magic used by some cloud giants. I think it's actually six. I think it's one for each giant. I'm dumb. And I counted something else, which is just another feature as a rune. But it's not. But anyways, cloud giants. While wearing or carrying an object inscribed with this rune, you have advantage on dexterity, sleight of hand, checks, and charisma, deception, checks. In addition, when you or a creature you can see within 30 feet of you is hit by an attack, you can use your reaction to invoke the rune and choose a different creature within 30 feet of you, other than the attacker. The chosen creature must be the target of the attack, using the same roll. This magic can transfer the attack's effect regardless of the attack's range. Once you invoke this rune, you can't do so again until you finish a short or long rest. Pretty neat. Moving on to the Fire Rune. This rune's magic channels the masterful craftsmanship of great smiths. While wearing or carrying an object inscribed with this rune, your proficiency bonus is doubled for any ability check that you make that uses your proficiency with a tool. In addition, when you hit a creature with a weapon using a weapon, when you hit a creature with an attack using a weapon, you can invoke the rune to summon fiery shackles. The target takes an extra 2d6 fire damage, and it must succeed on a strength saving throw or be restrained for 1 minute. While restrained by the shackles, the target takes 2d6 fire damage at the start of each of their turns. The target can repeat the saving throw at the end of each of its turns, banishing the shackles on a success. Once you invoke this rune, you can't do so again until you finish a short or long rest. I really like that one. Moving on to the next one is the Frost Rune. Hello. This rune's magic evokes the might of those who survive in the wintry wilderness, such as frost giants. What? Never saw that coming. While wearing or carrying an object inscribed with this rune, you have advantage on wisdom, animal handling, checks, and charisma, intimidation, checks. In addition, you can invoke the rune as a bonus action to increase your sturdiness. For 10 minutes, you gain a +2 bonus to all ability checks and saving throws that use strength or constitution. Once you invoke this rune, you can't do so again until you finish a short or long rest. Not too bad. Moving on to the next one, which is the Hill Rune. This rune's magic bestows a resilience reminiscent of a hill giant. While wearing or carrying an object that bears this rune, you have advantage on saving throws against being poisoned, and you have resistance against poison damage. In addition, you can invoke the rune as a bonus action, gaining resistance to bludgeoning, piercing, and slashing damage for 1 minute. Once you invoke this rune, you can't do so again until you finish a short or long rest. That one's really good. for hill giants being like the lowest of the low giants, that one's pretty good. Yeah. That's a pretty good rune. The stone rune is next. This rune's magic channels the judiciousness associated with stone giants. While wearing or carrying an object inscribed with this rune, you have advantage on wisdom insight checks, and you have dark vision out to a range of 120 feet. In addition, when a creature you can see ends its turn within 30 feet of you, you can use your reaction to invoke the rune and force the creature to make a wisdom saving throw, unless the save succeeds. The creature is charmed for you, by you for 1 minute. While charmed in this way, the creature has a speed of zero and is incapacitated, descending into a dreamy stupor. The creature repeats the saving throw at the end of each of its turns, ending the effect on a success. Once you invoke this rune, you can't do so again until you finish a short or long rest. And not last but not least is the storm rune. Using this rune, you can glimpse the future like a storm giant seer. While wearing or carrying an object inscribed with this rune, you have advantage on intelligence arcana checks, and you can't be surprised as long as you aren't incapacitated. In addition, you can invoke the rune as a bonus action to enter a prophetic state for 1 minute or until you're incapacitated. Until the state ends, when you or another creature that you can see within 60 feet of you makes an attack roll, saving throw, or an ability check, you can use your reaction to cause the roll to have advantage or disadvantage. Once you invoke this rune, you can't do so again until you finish a short or long rest. Oh, six runes. Pretty neat. Some of them good, some of them bad, in my opinion. I mean, none of them, like, bad, but, like, some of them are just, like, not nearly as good as other ones.
When they came out with Rune Knight, I have to say, I expected them to be based on kind of the dwarves, and I was not anticipating them being based on the giant runes.
Giants.
That I find interesting.
Mm-hmm. So
I don't hate it.
Yeah. So moving on to another third level ability that you get.
Oh god, I forgot that was only the third level.
This is all at third level. Two of these runes immediately. Literally, every day you can swap out which rune you want, and you can only have up to two of them. At the end of the, like, level 20, literally level 15 and on, you have 5 out of 6 of these active at once. Keep that in mind, okay?
Like, dude, I'm not gonna lie. Jeez Louise. I was listening to you read that off, and I was like, man, this
He's
class
gonna stop
is...
at some point, right?
I was like, this class is just runes. Like, in my head, you just listed off the entire subclass, and I was like, you know, I still don't hate it. I'd consider using it, but I'm not sold on it.
But it doesn't end there.
It doesn't end there.
That's the beginning of it. I would have been okay with this being the whole subclass, but there's so much more to it where you're just like, okay, we'll get into it. So, as starting at third level, again, you get an ability called Giant's Might. You have learned how to imbue yourself with the might of giants. As a bonus action, you can magically gain the following benefits, which last for 1 minute. If you are smaller than large, you become large. It literally makes you bigger. Along with anything you are wearing, if you lack the room to become large, your size doesn't change. You literally grow in size to large. You have advantage on strength checks and strength saving throws, and once on each of your turns, one of your attacks with a weapon or an unarmed strike can deal an extra 1d6 damage to a target on a hit. You could do this every day. You could do this multiple times every day, actually, because the next thing I was about to read, which I didn't because I'm stupid, was you could use this feature a number of times equal to your proficiency bonus, and you regain all expended uses when you finish your long rest. You could literally do this every combat. And it lasts for a minute, so it's probably going to last the whole combat. Because that's 10 rounds. On top of all of your rune stuff that you can do for a minute.
You become really, really good at decking people.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's the ancient it for level giant 3. Art. The ancient giant art of catch these hands.
I actually love this so much. Michael was talking about he probably would want to play a Psy Warrior. Rune Knight is totally all my alley. I'm like, I love all of this. So, that's third level. Starting at 7th level, you get Runic Shield. You learn to invoke the rune magic to protect your allies. When another creature you can see within 60 feet of you is hit by an attack roll, you can use your reaction to force the attacker to reroll the d20 and use the new roll. You can use this feature a number of times equal to your proficiency bonus, and you regain all expended uses when you finish a long rest. You could just make people reroll. Hey, did you just roll a nat 20 over there, DM? Screw you! Roll it again, loser. That's what I have to say.
See, and you get that ability in addition to also getting another rune.
Yup! Another rune a day. You get to have 3 active now.
Yeah.
Next up at 10th level, you have Great Stature. The magic of your runes permanently alters you. When you gain this feature, roll 3d4. You grow a number of inches in height equal to the roll. Moreover, the extra damage you deal with the Giant's Might feature increases to a d8. This class literally makes you bigger. You literally level up to 10th level and you grow in size. That's literally it. Why is no one else like as surprised about this than I am? You literally get bigger.
Well, you know, I'm not gonna lie, I kind of already knew that this was a thing going into it a little bit, but
I mean, I did kinda... too, but still, it's like
this is one of the subclasses that I've read up on in the past just because
It's interesting.
It's not a secret that I hate the unarmed fighting style.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it is because when you pair it with this subclass, it is so bad. And by bad, I mean overpowered.
It's so good.
So, guys, fun fact also about this subclass. This subclass is one of the keys to building what someone came up with. They came up with a way to build a Titan Shifter from Attack on Titan, and this is the subclass, one of the subclasses they use to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I find it very, very fun.
Guys, I've got 3d4 right here. We just leveled up to 10. Let's see how much taller we get. Okay, it was only 5 inches, but still. Size doesn't matter.
I mean,
anyways,
that's like half a foot almost.
That's almost half a foot.
That you just grow overnight.
Listen, you could grow anywhere from 3 to 12 inches. You can grow a quarter of a foot to a whole foot just overnight.
And if you think about it, if you even roll minimum and you grow 3 inches, okay, you just grew 3 inches overnight. That is insane.
Nah, I do that every day. What are you talking about?
This is the baffled reactions I wanted at the beginning of me reading this feature. Anyways,
bro, 3 inches every
you get
morning,
that?
Bro. I get
guys.
That.
Oh my god!
Sorry, children.
Guys, you get that. The best part is, you grow anywhere from 3 to 12 inches overnight, and you also get to do one more rune a day.
Yeah.
Anyway, starting at 15th level, you get Master of Runes. You can invoke each rune that you know of from your rune carver feature twice rather than once. And you regain all expended uses when you finish a short or long rest instead of just at a long rest. What?
And in case
Are
that wasn't
serious?
Enough, you also gain access to another rune.
You get access to 5 of them at once, and you can use each of them. 2 times, and then you gotta take a quick nap, and you can use them 2 more times after that.
Let me take a nap,
oh,
bro.
Oh my gosh. It's so ridiculous.
You have the same recharge capability as a warlock.
Oh my goodness. And then, last but not least, at 18th level, you get Runic Juggernaut. You learn how to amplify your rune-powered transformation. As a result, the extra damage you deal with the Giant's Might feature increases to a d10. Moreover, when you use that feature, your size can increase to huge, and while you are that size, your reach increases by 5 feet. You get so much more swole and big And I'm only a little sad that you don't get the sixth rune to have all six of them on your gear at once. I mean, you're also limited to, like, how much gear you have on, right? Because, like, you can only do one per your set of armor, one for your shield, if you have a shield, one for your weapon, if you, you know, whatever. And then after that, you have to use jewelry and whatnot.
Dude, but just wear a bunch of different rings.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
That you can link together to create brass knuckles.
Oh, there, my boom.
Magic item created.
Too good. It's too good. Well, then it would be you're enchanting one thing. You're putting your rune on one thing, I would argue. If you connect them all to brass knuckles. Because that's a weapon.
It's rings so you're just doing that it to one connect weapon. To create a brass knuckle.
But they're not separate anymore because you connect them. Anyways, that's Rune Knight. It's ridiculous for literally no reason, and I love it. I love every second of it.
I'm not going to lie, man. It sounds like you should probably be having Mercy right now.
Mercy, you say?
Why is that?
Next up is Monk. The Way of
Wait
Mercy.
Wait a second. Ben's talking about Monk?
I know. The day we thought would never come.
Well, and Jake just talked about Fighter.
I mean, I talk about Fighter still. I still like to talk about Fighter.
Anyways.
I'd be surprised if I started talking about Druid. Then I'd be like, well.
Yeah, I would have to strangle him after the show if he talked about Druid, because Druid is my baby.
You say on an episode that I talked about Druid?
Shut up!
But Michael, you also have a Druid. So.
Yeah. Jake knows nothing about the wonders of nature.
I also have a druid, though. So, I mean, whatever.
You know, Jake? Jake will not be joining us next week.
Because he'll be in the grave.
You'll be one with nature, then. Then you'll
hugging
understand.
Hugging the stats of the Rune Knight.
But have you ever wanted to put some cleric in your monk?
Not really.
Well, now you can.
I kind of did with Sun Soul a bit.
Welcome to the Way of Mercy. At level 3, when you first take this subclass, you get Implements of Mercy. Just imagine me with a thumb up and my teeth shining. That give me a big wink. Way of Mercy. Ding! You gain proficiency in the insight and medicine skills, and you gain proficiency with the herbalism kit. You can smoke dank kush. You also gain a special mask, which you often wear when using the features of this subclass. You determine its appearance or generate it by randomly rolling on the Merciful Mask table. The table includes ravens, black and white, crying visage, laughing visage, a skull, or a butterfly.
I just like the idea of a monk just walking around with a plague doctor mask.
That would be good.
Does the appearance of the mask have any effect on the subclass in any way?
No!
Not at all.
So you could just make it a mask if you want. Like it.
Yes!
Oh, okay, cool.
Also at level 3, Hand of Healing. They're really subtle on the healing part of this class.
Oh, okay.
Your mystical touch can mend wounds. As an action, you could spend one key point to touch a creature and restore a number of hit points equal to a roll of your martial arts die plus your wisdom modifier. Just punch him in the shoulder and heal him.
All right.
Also at level 3. Because Monk.
Wait, there's more to that, isn't there?
A little bit? Well, I mean, there are, I guess, when you use your Flurry of Blows, you can replace one of the unarmed strikes with the use of this feature without spending a key point for the healing.
Oh.
As I said, you punch them in the shoulder and they heal.
Yeah, but you could also do it with, you know, your bonus
action. But also at level 3. Third ability at level 3. Hand of Harm. This one heals. This one harms.
You use your ki to inflict wounds, as opposed to doing it the old-fashioned way. When you hit a creature with an unarmed strike, you can spend one ki point to deal an extra necrotic damage equal to one roll of your martial arts die, plus your wisdom modifier. You can use this feature only once per turn.
You just get to, like, double your damage, pretty much, because
yep.
you're most likely hitting them with your martial arts die, and mm-hmm. then...
Yep.
Plus your dex, and then this one, you get to tack on another martial arts die and your wisdom, which are probably the same because they're probably both 20.
This one heals.
Eventually.
This one harms. At level 6, you get Physician's Touch, which in America we pay a lot of money for. You can administer even greater cures with a touch, and if you feel it's necessary, you can use your knowledge to cause harm. This is a dangerous subclass. When you use Hand of Healing on a creature, you can also end one disease or one of the following conditions affecting the creature: blinded, deafened, paralyzed, poisoned, or stunned.
Ooh.
When you use Hand of Harm on a creature, you can subject that creature to the poisoned condition until the end of your next turn.
Oh. Neat. Just give him a disadvantage.
Yeah, throat punch, disadvantage.
Unless they're a dwarf.
I guess, yeah. Or a monk.
Another monk, yeah. At level 11, you get Flurry of Healing and Harm.
Oh, I never saw that one coming.
You'll never see the level 17 ability coming, that's for sure. But at level 11, Flurry of Healing and Harm, you can now mete out a Flurry of Comfort and Harm. When you use Flurry of Blows, you can now replace each of the unarmed strikes with a use of your Hand of Healing without spending key points for the healing. In addition, when you make an unarmed strike with Flurry of Blows, you can use Hand of Harm with that strike without spending the key point for Hand of Harm. You can still use Hand of Harm only once per turn.
Oh. Neat.
And at level 17.
I'm starting to think that the subclass should just be called Way of Heal and Harm.
I'm confused why it's called Hand of Mercy. Actually, no, that makes perfect sense, because you're either healing them or you're putting them out of their misery. Makes perfect sense. I take my statement back. All right. Level 17. Hand of Ultimate Mercy.
Hand of Ultimate Healing or Harm.
No. Mercy. Your mastery of life energy opens the door to the ultimate mercy. It still hasn't stated what that is. As an action, you can touch the corpse of a creature that has died within the past 24 hours and expend 5 key points. Just 5. The creature then returns to life, regaining a number of hit points equal to 4d10 plus your wisdom modifier. If the creature died while subject to any of the following conditions, it revives them. It revives with them. With them removed. Sorry. I know. I thought it would be really funny, though, if I was just like, it revives your horrible ailment. The
You're
ultimate
still
mercy.
Petrified. Like...
Yeah. No, it gets rid of their ailments. blinded, deafened, paralyzed, poisoned, and stunned. Once you use this feature, you can't use it again until you finish a long rest.
You know what I love about this? Hey, cleric that decided to take Revivify. Screw you.
Not even Revivify. Like this is level 17, and this is 24 hours. This is, like, the big ones, baby. Like, this is, like, true resurrection. Like, they're just like, nah, I'm gonna use 5 key points out of the 17 that I have a day, which I could just take a nap and get back. And this dude's fine.
Yep. The ultimate mercy.
But you have to wear a mask. There's literally no reason for you to wear a mask. It doesn't have any effect on any of the features of the class.
I would be honest. Yep. I won't put this nearly close to True Resurrection in any way, shape, or form.
Well, True Resurrection, I would neither, is
but
like
I'm just not going to say it.
Because True Resurrection, like, is 200 years.
Yeah, but still, like, 24 hours, and there's no price to it. I can't remember which of the spells is, like, 24 hours. But, like, Jeez Louise.
Yeah. But that's not the only thing we've come to cover today. Because monks, they have not just mercy, but they have spiritual enlightenment.
Okay, I was like, where's it going with this?
And those monks who have acquired spiritual enlightenment, they go down the way of the astral self. Da-da-da.
The way?
Which is a lot like Poe in Kung Fu Panda 3. Specifically Kung Fu Panda 3.
What a good poll. Yeah, I get it. What a good poll. I like that.
At level 3, you get Arms of the Astral Self. Your mastery of your ki allows you to summon a portion of your astral self. As a bonus action, you can spend one ki point to summon the arms of your astral self. When you do so, each creature of your choice that you can see within 10 feet of you must succeed on a dexterity saving throw or take force damage equal to 2 rolls of your martial arts die. For 10 minutes, these spectral arms hover near your shoulders or surround your arms, your choice. You determine the arms' appearance, and they vanish early if you are incapacitated or die. While the spectral arms are present, you gain the following benefits. You can use your wisdom modifier in place of your strength modifier when making strength checks and strength saving throws. You can use the spectral arms to make unarmed strikes. When you make an unarmed strike with the arms on your turn, your reach for it is 5 feet greater than normal. The unarmed strikes you make with the arms can use your wisdom modifier in place of your strength or dexterity modifier for the attack and damage rolls, and their damage type is force.
I'm just picturing like a monk just like slowly getting overwhelmed, right? Uh-huh. Like Spade dives into the middle of a group of so many creatures. just so many. And they're all like surrounding him, and then he just like anime explosions, just like him erupting with a bunch of fists that just punch in all directions at everybody. and then the smoke settles and it's just a bunch of bodies surrounding the one anime protagonist. Like,
I'm not gonna lie, in the Royal Flush you guys are all kind of like anime protagonists, so I can believe it. But level 6, Visage of the Astral Self. You can summon the visage of your astral self as a bonus action, or as part of the bonus action you take to activate the arms of the astral self. You can spend one ki point to summon this visage for 10 minutes. It vanishes early if you're incapacitated or die. The spectral visage covers your face like a helmet or mask. You determine its appearance. While the spectral visage is present, you gain the following benefits. Astral sight. You can see normally in darkness, both magical and non-magical, to a distance of 120 feet. Wisdom of the spirit. You have advantage on wisdom, insight, and charisma intimidation checks. Word of the spirit. When you speak, you can direct your words to a creature of your choice you can see within 60 feet of you, making it so only that creature can hear you. Alternatively, you can amplify your voice so that all creatures within 600 feet can hear you.
That's not that much. That's not that far. That's totally fine. That's like me.
The thing is, it doesn't specify that
It could be in a quiet forest, or it could be on a battlefield where everything is loud, and no matter how loud the area, you are louder.
Everyone within 600 feet.
Yep.
There you go!
I just want to see a monk in just the middle of a battlefield, and then he just goes, "Hey, Tapia!"
Oh my goodness.
The ultimate callback that literally no one on the pod, none of our listeners will understand.
You had to be there, folks. What if Tapia listens and he knows?
He knows. If I was the DM, I would make it so that anytime the monk that uses this used it, somewhere, Tapia would know.
No, you don't understand. What if Tapia were to hear this in the podcast right now? Tapia, we're talking to you.
I'd be honored that Tapia listens to our podcast. And I would also tell him that all of my offers still stand. Anyways.
Bro. Oh, man.
How's that a level 11 ability, Ben?
Oh, it's pretty great. Body of the astral self. When you have both your astral arms and visage summoned, you can cause the body of your astral self to appear, no action required. This spectral body covers your physical form like a suit of armor, connecting with the arms and the visage. You determine its appearance. While the spectral body is present, you gain the following benefits. Deflect energy. When you take acid, cold, fire, force, lightning, or thunder damage, you can use your reaction to deflect it. When you do so, the damage you take is reduced by 1d10 plus your wisdom modifier. Minimum of 1. Ooh. Empowered arms. Got gains. You got spiritual gains. Once on each of your turns, when you hit a target with the arms of the astral self, you could deal extra damage to the target equal to your martial arts die.
Ooh, yeah.
And at level 17, how could this get any better, you ask?
How could this get any better?
I can't help but notice so far, you've been skipping leg day. You get awakened astral self at level 17. Your connection to your astral self is complete, allowing you to unleash its full potential. As a bonus action, you can spend 5 key points to summon the arms, visage, and body of your astral self and awaken it for 10 minutes. This awakening ends early if you are incapacitated or die. While your astral self is awakened, you gain the following benefits. Armor of the Spirit. You gain a +2 to your armor class.
Nice.
And Astral Barrage. Whenever you use the extra attack feature to attack twice, you can instead attack 3 times if all the attacks are made with your astral arms.
Dude, because monks didn't attack enough.
Uh-huh. Still, I can't help but point out the visage skips leg day. No mention of legs at all.
Not even once. You know what, though? Everything is fully customizable, so my arms can be legs. And they can be doing kicks.
That is true.
Boom. Leg day acquired.
I just can't help but imagine, though, like, you've got, like, this super buff upper body and arms and head, right? But you're still walking around on your normal legs.
Little needle legs, little toothpicks.
Yeah. Like, what?
Yeah.
But that's it.
I approve. These monk things get the Traveler Jake stamp of approval.
You know what this visage makes me think of? All Might.
You know what it makes me think of? It makes me think of Naruto. Not specifically Naruto. Actually, you know what? Maybe specifically Naruto. Because the Uchiha's got it. And then towards the end of the series, Naruto basically did the same thing. And then, like, they don't talk about that. Like, I don't think anyone was ever like, is Naruto copying Sasuke? They were all just like, oh, he mastered his thing. Ha ha ha, so good. But Sasuke did it, like, 2 seasons before him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know you nothing know about Naruto.
You know what it makes me think of? Makes me think about how Traveler's Tips and Tales is a YouTube channel of Traveler's Tips and Tales. It also makes me think about how Traveler's Tips and Tales has an Instagram, which is also Traveler's Tips and Tales. It also makes me think about how Traveler's Tips and Tales also may or may not have a Facebook, which is at Traveler's Tips and Tales. It also makes me think about how Traveler's Tips and Tales has a Tumblr page, which is Traveler's Tips and Tales. It also makes me think about how anyone anywhere can email the travelers at travelerstipsandtales@gmail.com and ask them any questions that they want, or even go to their website, which is travelerstipsandtales.com.
Oh, hey, you forgot about the Twitter.
Oh, you mean the Twitter at TipsTales?
Wait, hold on. It's not the same as the rest of them?
Nope. You know why?
Why?
Because we're dumb. That's why. It also makes me think about Patreon, which is at Traveler's Tips and Tales as well. Also, thanks to Dalton and Ben's mom
for supporting us in our highest tier on Patreon. In all seriousness, we have a Patreon where we post all of our exclusive content that you can't get on our normal stuff. You guys, if you are interested, you should go check it out. We have guests that we pull sometimes from Patreon because they're just really cool people. And you can talk to us whenever you want if you're high enough. Yep. Tier. Not whenever, but whenever we're like all available.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really cool. We're working on building up this good community of people.
Yeah.
Talking of community.
Yeah. Also, go check out local game stores. If you are in the greater Sacramento / Bay Area, we have 4 that we actually like to promote because we've gone in, we've talked to the people there, and we really like them. We think they're cool people. So these ones are Forgotten Path Games in Vacaville, which is where we all met each other and formed our own group. Mad Alpaca Games in Fairfield, Davis Cards and Games in Davis, and Hobby Badger Games in West Sacramento. And these are all super awesome places. I've personally gone in and talked to everybody at these places and super knowledgeable people that are very passionate about the things that they sell.
I've also gone in and talked to most of these people and also agree that these are really cool people. And also, just like game stores in general are really cool places, and we've already had this spiel multiple times, so I'm sure by now you've already heard it. Especially on, you know, reclassed episode, like, 4 or whatever. like, this is not your first episode, so I'm sure you've already heard all of this before. But there are ample reasons why game stores deserve your support. But yeah.
But I think
I guess
that wraps it up.
Adventure awaits.